Welcome to this very special bonus episode brought to you from Nautilus International's General Meeting 2019. We're here in Rotterdam and I'm joined by four brilliant guests to discuss diversity and equality in the maritime industry. So let's get to know each other. Who are we and what do we do?
Yeah, so I'm Adam Harrison. I'm a second mate working on container ships.
I'm Sarah Stevens. I'm a deck officer. Been doing this for about 6 years now.
Hi Graham, Debbie Cavaldore, the Head of Strategy at Nautilus International.
I'm Jessica Tyson, I'm a pilot and a deputy harbourmaster, having been at sea for 18 years.
The whole purpose of this episode comes from the fact that we have a motion being discussed about improving diversity and equality in the maritime industry. What is the union doing to promote exactly that, and why has this motion come to the floor?
So the union's had a women's forum and a young maritime professionals forum for just under 10 years now. And we are starting to see some take-up in the industry wider now. When we first started, hardly anybody was talking about women in maritime particularly, and they certainly weren't looking at some of the barriers that women face through no fault of their own, and things like personal protective equipment being size-fitting for them. Those sort of issues that are really basic and quite easy to solve, people just weren't addressing them, because if you look at the forums of people that are making those decisions, they tended to be older males who just don't consider some of those issues, then yet they don't affect them. But in the last, certainly in the last couple of years, we've seen a large take-up. Women in maritime and women in shipping has its own hashtag now, for example. It's become a lot more trendy almost. And we're getting involved in conversations at local, national and international levels on how to remove those barriers to women in shipping and how to encourage those women in shipping. And it's great that that's happening. That work's by no means finished, but at least the conversation has moved into the sphere where it can make a real difference and actual changes can happen. So we want to see that conversation widen now, rather than just closing it off and pretending it's done. We want to see that conversation widened out to include all sorts of diversity areas and people that are vulnerable to discrimination within the industry.
So Debbie, you mentioned some of the very basic issues that particularly women face in the industry, you know, such as having like correct PPE, which is size specific. But are there any more serious issues that you think women, or particularly LGBT plus community members, might be facing in the industry? Anyone has any experiences that they'd like to share as to why you think these discussions are important to be had at meetings like this?
Well, I think really, really basically, gay people, for example, have always been at sea. Back in historical time, it's well known that, in fact, sea was a place you could run away, for men specifically, run away, be who you are, and that's not a new thing. Likewise, women have always been at sea, albeit dressed up as boys and hiding in amongst the systems. I guess what we're looking at now is more of a open workplace where you can be yourself and you haven't got to hide who you are, be it dressed up as a boy, or you haven't got to be that overly effeminate guy dressed up as a girl to be accepted back in the 70s, 60s, whenever at sea. So really what we're talking about is being able to be who you are, and that cliche of bringing your whole self to work is effectively where I see this is going, just bringing it out in the open.
I would sort of concur with that, in as much as, you know, one of the best people I sailed with on my first trip was a cook, a steward. One of them was called Talky Malky, as an affectionate word, because he was slightly effeminate. The other guy was called Lulu, and that's what they were known with, and they were as much part of the crew as anybody else. You know, what your sexuality is, what your proclivities are, does not determine your capabilities on board a vessel. It does not define you. You know, in this day and age, you're allowed to be what you want, where you want, in your own home, and essentially you're at a home. That is your home, so therefore you should be respected. You don't have to like what people do, you just have to be able to respect them on a professional level and kind of live and let live, in my book.
I think one of the things to remember as well is that these aren't new conversations. Workplaces have been dealing with these issues for years, and it's kind of the maritime industry is suddenly realising what workplace office-based people knew all the time, that a truly diverse and inclusive workplace gets the best out of all of your people. So it's just about taking the arguments that have been made time and time again already, and getting the maritime industry to realise that it applies to them as much as it applies to anybody else.
Do you think there's a reason why it's taken shoreside shipping companies to actually respect the fact that on board a ship is almost exactly the same as what it's like in an office?
I think some of it is because the communications have increased. So there's a greater, you know, there's a greater ability to let the outside world know what's going on. You know, again, I sound like an old crusty, but when I first went away to sea, there were no mobile phones. It was all through the Portishead radio station for getting messages to ships. There wasn't satellite, and that wasn't that long ago. So at the end of the day, if you increase the communication, people then have a greater capability for letting their loved ones know and other people know if things are going wrong. Before, you were on a tin island. You still are on a tin island. That's the thing. If things get started or happen on board a ship, you can't walk away from it. You still have to be able to work with people.
I think as well, legislature has changed and is changing. I think equal marriage is 2014, which is incredibly recent, really. And whilst I can quite confidently say gay people have always been there, women have always been there, there wasn't the legal backup for that. So I think it's just people playing catch up. So that, because people, I think the ban on homosexuals in the armed forces only was overturned in 1999, put into force 2000. So that's still less than 20 years. We are moving along, and I think we're just still playing catch up, because I think the maritime industry, in my opinion, is quite bitter. It's lots of individual companies, lots of individual this, and you have to have the right policies in place. So it's all very well being on a ship. I'll speak about a male that I spoke to a few years ago with his shipping company. It's not my shipping company. And he's gay, but he doesn't feel he can be out as being gay. And when he had a look into, well, what's my company's policies on this? What do they do? There are no policies. So I think that's a problem. And it's just, like I say, I think catching up with where our current legislation is.
So are the union putting or piling the pressure on now? Is it, you know, making people play catch up?
I think the whole of society is piling the pressure on. I think what you're saying is true. Shipping has got away with a lot of things because it's been out of the public eye. People don't see it, people don't hear it. People are happy for their stuff to arrive in their shelves, on their doorsteps, without really thinking about how it's got there. But since communication's been thrown wide open, these things get exposed. Shipping companies will always, and have always, done whatever's cheapest. So if it's cheap and easy to just have the same crew that you've always had and not look too far for them, then that's what they're going to do. Once it's exposed and we start asking the questions of why aren't you doing it, I don't suppose any of them will say we don't have LGBT people on board because we don't want them, we won't have women on board because we don't want them, certainly not in European countries because they know they can't. It's just that they're not going to bother going out of their way to find those people when they don't have to. So throwing a light on life at sea is what's making people, you know, what's making shipping companies have to change their policies. And people are now, you know, our members are now being brave enough to stand up and say, you know, I am a woman, look, I am a woman. And not having to go to sea dressed as a boy. You know, LGBT plus people are able to come out now and say, I am here, knowing that they've got a little bit of reassurance that the legislation is behind them. And I know that doesn't help solve everything. You know, it's still a brave thing to do sometimes if you're in one of those companies that's a bit more restrictive. But maritime industry will only change if the people that are in it force it to.
So one of the comments which we get from some of our more traditional listeners is, when we talk about gender, sex, you know, sexual orientation, why does it matter? Why should it matter? Shouldn't the rank, whether you're a captain, whether you're any rank, what that may be, you should be based on merit?
In my experience, I've had some older men or older generation that I've sailed with who've been the most supportive and the most forward-thinking and the most inclusive. Mm. And they have seen me by my merits, not by the fact that I have different lumps and bumps and different shapes.
A young gay man can be sexist.
Yeah. And absolutely.
And some of the most vehemently opposed people to the whole women at sea thing have been women, in my experience. So I think that
it's a fear factor of the unknown. They think they know what it'll be. Actually, it's a bunch of people being asked to be given the opportunity to work in an industry that engages them where they want to move forward in a meaningful way without having to have obstacles put in their way, which are irrelevant in the grand scheme of things. Does your sexuality define whether you are competent? Does whether you are dark-skinned, fair-skinned, gay? People are people. The joy of humanity is that we are all different. I don't think it is different from any other industry. I think that's part of the problem. If you are a minority, you become an easy target, not because people mean to always, sometimes it's very active, but because you are the minority. You haven't got the same backup. You're not in the herd, as it were. So consequently, you have to have, a greater sense of self and self-belief. I think the reason people are talking about it more is because there is a greater awareness of that. that what your characteristics are or your leanings are does not define your capabilities in a professional sense.
Yeah, me again. I think also building on from what Jess said, if you are minority, you in some ways have to work a little bit harder, a little bit more difficult, I think. If you were to walk onto a ship as a young sort of African ethnicity, and you walk in as a young guy, up you go on your first trip to sea, you will look around and there will be nobody, I would put money in, there would be nobody who's in a position where you would look and go, I could be that person, I could be a captain in my career. And obviously, speaking by personal experience, I've never sailed with a female captain. I've met female seafarers, brilliant. But I've never been able to walk onto a ship, I've been able to map out my career in terms of people I'm working with. And I actually think it's worse for the BAME subgroup for that one.
There was an article in the most recent Telegraph. It was a letter response to a letter from the previous edition, and it discussed experiences of sexual harassment and not being able to tell anyone. So if anyone of our listeners is experiencing homophobic abuse or sexual harassment or abuse in the workplace, who can they turn to now for the 21st century seafarer? Who is there to support them? Because no one should feel like they don't have anyone to turn to now.
Well, most companies provide contact, I would say, most of the larger companies, and I know that Nautilus would be happy to help anyone with any problems themselves who's experiencing any sort of discrimination on board or harassment, because it does still happen, unfortunately, and people in the isolated environments away at sea, no matter how much communication you have, you're still 1,000 miles away from home, and it can be difficult to tell your family what's going on if it's only bad news. You don't want to be giving your family just bad news when they're at home. So there's still a lot of isolation, I feel, even with the improved communications.
Also, there are several of the charitable bodies, I think Seafarers Trust, to name a few, there are many, 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 but they'll all have some kind of hotline where you can get little handy little cards, will say, here's a WhatsApp number, here's email, here's a phone number, you can ring somebody. That notwithstanding, some companies are better than others and some will have policies in place for that. I know that the company that I work for has formally introduced a women's network with an identifiable point of contact to take off the ship if you've got any issues that you don't feel you can discuss through the chains on the ship. So, but again, that's 2019.
I think I've in the crosshairs. I started out in 88. I sailed, probably was the only female bar when I was a cadet, when I had another female cadet there. I sailed for 18 years at sea, and in that time I actually only took over, from another female mate once. And I only sailed with two other women who happened to be engineers on two different trips. Other than that, I've always been sailing as the only female. It does bring some instances you have to be a bit more aware, because obviously becomes a focal point for a variety of different reasons. I think some of that also comes down to how well you relate to people and whether you can actually make friends and people that you can also do, because it is important to have at least, hopefully, one person somewhere. I nearly had a problem on a ship. I was good friends with the chief engineer. That probably, I could say, saved my sanity and made sure that I could actually keep going.
Obviously, the one thing we would always say is get in contact with Nautilus as soon as you can. We have got the 24/7 helpline, which is run by IceOn, so you get all the access that IceOn can give seafarers anyway. But being a Nautilus member, they'll then put you straight through. They'll deal with that initial question. But also, one anecdote I just wanted to share was one of the first female seafarers that I interviewed when I started work at the Nautilus Telegraph was a captain from a cruise ship. And she was telling me about the kind of female network that she had around her of female seafarers, but also pointed out that one of the difficulties that she found was that when you're a female seafarer, they expect you to be best mates with all the other female seafarers. And she said, you know, just because I'm a female seafarer, I don't want to represent all female seafarers, I just want to be me.
I feel quite passionate that we get quite waylaid with gay issues, women's issues, this issues, but actually diversity is everything. You could sit in a room with two people and you've got diversity there, be they the same gender, the same sex, the same career point, you've got diversity. And I think we forget that, and I think, to be honest, it upsets people. I think it upsets the straight white men, the older ones who go, well, it's not about this, not about that. Diversity is not a dirty word, it is everybody's individual differences and how we bring with that.
One of the good things about the maritime industry, how many different nationalities you can work with, how much of the world you can see, but not all of those nationalities or religion or parts of the world are inclusive when it comes to LGBT community or women. How do we bridge that gap? Do we run a risk of maybe insulting or offending their traditions or their beliefs by saying it's okay to be gay and a seafarer, it's okay to be a female seafarer?
The International Labour Organization recently held a global meeting to talk about encouraging women and young people to go to sea. And it came up that there's still several countries in the world who do mandatory pregnancy testing for women. And when we suggested that this was anti-UN human rights laws, they were really quite offended, because what they were saying was that they're protecting the safety of their women seafarers and they really want women to go to sea, but they don't want them to go to sea when they're pregnant and have difficulties. Now, you can say you're using the mandatory pregnancy testing as a way to find out if your female seafarers are pregnant so that you don't have to give them contracts. But their argument will always be that it's for the safety of those women. And when you get LGBT or gay male seafarers going to sea in countries where being gay is still illegal, we have a right, a duty to protect our members who are gay, who are sailing into those areas, because sometimes they might not even know that it's illegal to be gay in those areas. So we still have a duty of care to protect gay seafarers, female seafarers, anybody who is likely to be discriminated against for any reason from those countries who still have those laws in place. We can't change those laws of those countries, but we can be aware of them and we can put pressure as a nation, as a European body and internationally to change those laws that prohibit those people.
I think people just have to be open-minded if they're going to go away, and you have to learn to live and let live. You don't always have to agree with people's points of view, and that includes religious points of view. I had Indonesian crew, we had a nudist cruise. The crew, actually, not the officers, who had more of a, the Muslim faith, where it could have been more of an issue, they were asked if they wished to get off so that they weren't being exposed to that if it was against their religion. Not one of them did get off. So I think many of the issues are perceptions rather than actualities, and we need to learn to trust the crews and the officers to behave in a fairly responsible manner. That may be slightly naive on my part, but I found in my understanding, if you learn to talk with people and communicate, you're likely to get the better outcome without any of the friction that can sometimes happen.
So Adam, you have any experiences on board where you've been discriminated against because of any reason?
No, honestly, not to my face. I'm aware that people probably do behind my back, but my personal experience is that I don't generally tell people, and they will make their own assumptions about me, and I find that makes it easier to work with people. I'll just get on and do my job, and it's not, because it's not relevant to my job, my sexuality, so I don't feel like I should have to explain it and expose myself like that, because I am well aware that I will be working with people of different nationalities and different religions who aren't okay with who I am. I don't feel I'm not bringing my true self to work, really. I would like to be able to, but I don't personally feel like we're quite there yet.
Do you think we're having this conversation enough, or are we focusing too much on having this conversation in the UK or perhaps in the West?
I think it's developing slowly. Things have improved a lot, I dare say, and the exposure is there. There's just always going to be discrimination, I feel personally. But as long as there are procedures in place that you know you're not in the wrong, that you can be defended, you can defend yourself, then I think that's okay. Like we were talking about earlier, as long as a company has down on paper, that they're behind you no matter what, then you can use that. You can use that to, pick yourself up if you're in a bad situation.
So Debbie, moving forward from the motions that we've discussed today and over the next couple of weeks and months, what do you hope, or what's the aim of the union when it comes to women at sea and also supporting those in the LGBT plus community?
I think we need to face that the maritime industry is never going to be leading on these things. It's always going to be following from behind. And we need to make sure that it does keep following. And as society changes and those issues become more widely accepted across the globe, that we make sure that all the maritime industries are following that. We want to make sure that people like Adam can take themselves to work and feel that anybody that goes on board a ship could be bullied and harassed. You know, you can have a captain who's particularly aggressive, and that can, you know, he can pick out any fault on anyone. We want to make sure that that's dealt with, and like Sarah said, that policies are in place to protect people at sea and at work. We want to make sure that we don't just pay lip service to equality. We want to make sure that we make the maritime industry truly inclusive, and that we're not just tick boxing people.
The things that come out of getting those people talking and improving bullying and harassment policies, getting policies on board for fair treatment, for mutual respect, are things that benefit everybody. Nobody wants to go to sea to live and work in a hostile environment, or one where fear and bullying and harassment are the norm. People want a nice time at work, they want to be able to get on with their jobs and live on the ship in the nicest possible way. So the things that we do and the policies that we have that come out of these groups benefit everybody. So it's not about pushing one group and not the other. It's about making life better for everybody.
Thank you all for coming on the show, and hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thank you.
Cheers, Graham.
For more information on Nautilus International, including who they are, where they work, and what they do, you can visit their website, following the link in the bio. We hope you enjoyed the show, and as always, don't forget to get in touch and let us know any ideas that you have for future episodes. We're also really excited to announce the launch of our Maritime Voices series. It's a collection of one-to-one interviews with the leading voices from across the maritime industry, and you can stay up to date with the latest releases on social media. We're available on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and also on our website, www.theshippingexchange.co.uk. Thanks for listening.